It's the Fall Garden Confidential with Jeff Anderson, the man you can't stump about trees. He'll plant seeds of knowledge in your garden. He's blooming with information.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.
Today also happens to be Octopus Day. So we'll combine the two, but we'll focus on the garden side. It's the Fall Gardening Confidential coming up next. Made possible by the New Mexico Department of Agriculture, Mesilla Valley Hospice, and Sierra Vista Growers. On KRWG Public Media, right after NPR News.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden with you.
It's time for the Fall Gardening Confidential with Jeff Anderson. Here with us today to stick around for the next 2 hours and answer your questions about, hey, what went well or not so well with your summer garden, and what are you planting for this fall? Maybe you're planting now for spring blooms, and we'd like to hear from you. But first, I must start with a technical note. Our phone line that we normally use for Voice of the Public and the confidentials is on the blink. So it's not blinking at all. It's dead. Done. 10-7. I think we talked about that yesterday. So we have a different phone number for you to call. Okay, so write this down if you have an opportunity. 575-646-3632. 646-3632 is the telephone number for you to call. You will ring directly into the air studio today. So this means a couple of things. First of all, we only have one line open at a time. So if you call and it's busy, please be patient and keep trying. 646-3632, or you can join us on social media. We are streaming our Zoom meeting on our Facebook page. Just look for KRWG and join us there. Good afternoon, Jeff. How you been?
Good afternoon, Casey, and good afternoon to everybody. I have been doing wonderful.
Well, let's give this a try. It looks like we already have our first caller, so let's see how this works. Good afternoon. You're on the Fall Gardening Confidential. Who's this?
This is Karen.
Hi, Karen. What can we do for you?
Well, it's about seeds and growing my garden with compost of seeds that I bought from the store. Okay, the question is, this year with the garden, I did plant from packaged seeds from scratch. But the ones that survived the compost and grew did not produce any fruit. They looked beautiful and lovely and thick and prosperous. But do you think it's a possibility that that is possibly GMOs, and that it's true that you have to rebuy new seeds, and that's possibly why I didn't get any fruit?
So I don't believe it would be anything to do with GMOs. It's the quality of the seeds, and it depends on what you were growing. So a lot of times people, if they're growing tomatoes, if the soil is too rich, the plants will grow wonderfully, but they won't fruit. So if there's too much nitrogen, you know, they'll be all lush and green, but they don't put on fruit because they don't have a reason to.
And that's kind of exactly what they did. All my stuff that should have happened 2 months ago is beautiful right now, but all I got was tomatoes and peppers, so.
Okay. Well, peppers, they really should have fruited. So sometimes, like this summer, I used calcium nitrate or potassium nitrate. That helps them produce more fruit. And maybe they just need a little trigger with that, or a little more stress, dry them out so that, you know, they think they're going to die and they better flower and produce some fruit for next year.
Okay, very good. I'm going to write that potassium and calcium nitrate down. Okay, well, thank you so much then.
Karen, thanks so much for your call. Good luck.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. 1209 at KRWG, and this is the Fall Gardening Confidential. We thank you for joining us. And yeah, we're having some technical problems with our normal telephone line. So we're asking you to call 646-3632. That's 575-646-3632 to talk with Jeff Anderson today about your garden. The Fall Gardening Confidential, made possible in part by Mesilla Valley Hospice, serving generations of families during difficult times. Mesilla Valley Hospice is made possible through donations and the support of the entire community. Learn more online at mesillamvhospice.org. And Jeff, we did receive quite a few questions in advance. So thank you to everyone who already wrote in their questions along our social media or emailed them in to feedback@nmsu.edu. We've collected, I hope we have all of your questions. So let's start with this one. I just became the landlord for two woodpeckers. They have pecked through my stucco and built nests in the foam on the north side of my house. I understand they will be here all winter. If I buy a bird box for them and place them directly underneath their nests and cover their existing nests when they leave in the spring, might this work to prevent further damage in the future? Where might I find the right bird box? So if, are you an expert in gardening woodpeckers, Jeff?
Not really, but I didn't think woodpeckers stayed here for the winter. So they're not really brooding in the winter or producing babies, as you would say, eggs. So I think as soon as you notice that they leave, if you put up chicken wire, some kind of wire so they can't get to wherever that's at, that will discourage them. And, you know, if you're going to put up a woodpecker box, I guess I would put it away from the house.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Right away. Yeah.
Good luck with those woodpeckers and let us know how it turns out. The next question is nematode solutions. I have nematodes in my garden beds. What are your suggestions to limit the damage caused? And then I realize I have to rotate crops and plant vegetables that are not susceptible to nematodes. Most seeds do not indicate nematode resistance. Please advise for next spring.
So there are a few seeds that indicate some nematode resistance, and you're doing the right thing by rotating your crops to less resistant plants to nematodes. The other thing that you can do is, like, especially in the summer, like June, is cover your garden bed with plastic, clear plastic, and let the sun, you know, have some moisture under there, let the sun bake it. And for a while, it'll clear up the nematodes. But nematodes are extremely prevalent here, and they'll eventually come back. So you don't want to use any kind of chemicals.
1212 at KRWG, and it's the Fall Gardening Confidential. We have a different telephone number for you to call today to speak with Jeff Anderson. So if you're feverishly dialing the number you've been told to dial in the past, stop doing that and call 575-646-3632. We only have one operational line right now, so you might get a busy signal. But right now, the line is open. So give us a call at 646-3632 to speak with Jeff Anderson. And tell us how your summer garden went. What were your successes and failures, if any? And maybe Jeff can help you fix those for next year. And the next question that we got in advance, Jeff, is asking what is the best turf grass for Las Cruces besides Bermuda, Buffalo, and Zoysia?
You already named the best ones. They're the most heat tolerant. It depends on where you're going to put the turf grass. There are some refined blue grasses that are as good as fescues. Now they all use water. I personally like, if you got the right place, I like St. Augustine grass. It's kind of a creeping grass. It's not perfectly cold already here, but we generally don't get that cold enough to freeze it out. You might get some freeze damage, you know, if you get down close to zero, but that's pretty much your choices, either fescue, a bluegrass, or St. Augustine.
You said if you've got the right place, what do you mean by that, Jeff?
Irrigation. You know, if you want it to look good, you need proper irrigation. You want to have that set up properly. If you're trying to grow a full sun type grass, and I'll have to say Bermuda, if you're going to grow Bermuda grass underneath shade, it's not going to grow in shade. You know, it won't tolerate any shade. So you need to use the correct kind of grass that will grow in a shady area.
So St. Augustine is better for those shaded areas?
St. Augustine is definitely better for that, and there are some bluegrasses better for that as well.
And would fescue go either way?
Fescue will tolerate some shade, and I mean, there are certain varieties of fescue that tolerate it better, but you know, you have to search those out and see what's actually available in your area.
All right, next question that came in. David wanted to know when and where he could get sunflowers.
What kind of sunflowers? There's ornamental, there's seeding ones, there's all kinds of different ones. Your best option to get seed for sunflowers is to go online and find the type that you want to grow and order them. You know, you can order them now and have them for next year.
575-646-3632. You'll hear me say that a lot because it's a different number than we normally have you call for the show. And we have Jeff Anderson today for the Fall Gardening Confidential, made possible in part by Sierra Vista Growers, dedicated to growing for the border community for over 30 years, growing native trees, shrubs, and flowers. More at sierravistagrowers.net, on Facebook or Instagram. And as I said earlier, this is a change because our main line just, you know, something happened. It went down. It quit working on us. And so we are having you dial straight into the studio, straight to me here. There's a line open right now if you'd like to call and speak with Jeff. 646-3632 is the telephone number. Let's get on the tomato topic. All right, because I know every time we do a show, you get a lot of tomato questions. And so let's see if we can't cover all of the tomato issues all at once. But here's a good question. My tomato plant is growing beautifully and putting out quite a bit of tomatoes, but several of them are showing up with blossom rot. I put eggshells in the soil. That helped for a bit. Then it came back. Then I put tomato plant food. That helped for a bit, but it came back. It seems that it's limited to my Roma tomatoes, not my cherry tomatoes. What else should I do?
So putting eggshells in your soil is like putting caliche in your soil. Eggshells are made out of calcium carbonate. So if you lived in the Southeast where you have really acidic soils, that would be fine. But we don't have acidic soils here, so they don't actually dissolve in your soil. To benefit your tomatoes. Those tomatoes need a quick source of calcium. So, you know, you have to look for things that are going to be there readily available for those tomatoes. The larger the tomato, the more calcium need it has. Also, calcium is carried in the water as the plant transpires. So if you skimp on watering and the plant gets stressed for water, it's also not getting calcium, because the calcium flows in the water system. So you can up your calcium in your soils. You could add gypsum, a small amount. You don't want to overdo it. You could do some early applications of calcium nitrate to bring calcium immediately available. But otherwise, just keep your plants well watered so they don't dry out and lack calcium.
All right, let's go to the phone now at 646-3632. Good afternoon. You're on the Fall Gardening Confidential. Who's this?
This is Martha. I'm in Lemitar.
Okay, say that one more time.
This is Martha. I'm in Lemitar.
Martha in Lemitar. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
If you can help me get rid of my mold.
Tell us about your mold.
Moles, M-O-L-E-S, little ugly little critters.
They're not ugly.
They're hideous. They are really hideous. The dog brought one in once, and I was absolutely transfixed. I couldn't look away. It was that attractive nuisance. Anyway, I see lots of tunnels in my yard, but I really don't see any holes. So I really don't have any hope of anything but maybe repelling, because I can't trap.
Okay. Um, I I don't know if we really have moles here in New Mexico. At least in the southern part of the state, I've never seen moles here. Do you want to make sure, first off, that you're correctly identifying what you have?
Martha, there's a Jeff, hold that thought, Jeff, because there's a lot of noise on the line. So, Martha, I'm going to turn your line down, so we're not going to be able to hear you for the moment while Jeff answers your question. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, so like I was saying, I have not seen personally moles in southern New Mexico, maybe up towards Lemontar, I'm not so sure, because things change as you get farther north and cooler climates, but I have not seen moles here. I'd have to talk with our wildlife specialist about that, but you want to make sure you get what's in your garden there correctly identified, because we have a lot of ground squirrels, and ground squirrels cause a lot of havoc, so I do know about those. The only way to deal with them is to trap things out.
So rather than protecting, because if these animals are burrowing animals, they can probably dig under just about anything you have, right?
Right. I mean, if they're going to dig under your garden, they can also dig under your house and cause foundation problems. So there are pack rats, there are ground squirrels, there's all kinds of things that will dig around here. So get it identified. Check with your agent in your county up there in Lemontar. I think that's Sierra County, possibly, and have that checked. I don't know if you hit Socorro County, either one. But check with your agent there for what it might exactly be, and then you can figure out a way to treat it.
Okay. Thank you, Martha, for the call, and thank you, Jeff, for the answer. The number to call is 575-646-3632 to be a part of the Fall Gardening Confidential today. We had to change up our phone number after a technical problem with our normal line. So we've got one line functioning, but we'll move through the callers as quickly as possible to get as many questions answered as we can. And we've got another caller already on the line again. Hi, who's this?
This is Beverly.
Hey, Beverly.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. My one is simple. I have two puffballs in my yard. Do I need to do anything?
First off, no. They don't hurt anything. They're just saprophytic, living on dead material. So they're not harmful.
All right. Well, I didn't think so. I kind of am amused by them, so I don't mind them at all. So I'll leave them alone. The other one is watering. I have problems sometimes with a new plant that I've purchased. Now, I purchase plants that have big pots. In other words, their quality, probably 8 or 9, a larger size of a pot that they come in. But sometimes I'm successful with keeping them, and then sometimes I'm not. And I don't know whether I'm watering them too much or not watering them enough, because they are native plants that I buy.
So most plants are grown either in a bark or a peat-like mix, and nowadays it's mostly a bark mix. And if you take that plant and you plant it directly into our native soils, whether it's a sandy soil or a clay soil, usually the bark mix is going to dry out faster than your soil. And with that, once that bark dries out, it actually repels water. So you can be watering the ground all around the plant, and water doesn't get into the roots, almost zero. I mean, just a little bit on the edges. And so the plants end up dying. And it doesn't matter if it's a 1 gallon, 15 or a 20 gallon plant, if water doesn't get to the roots until it's established, then the plant will end up dying. Some of the first signs you'll see is the plant wilting, leaves turning brown, bottom leaves falling off. One of the things you can do is when you get the plant, and it depends highly on the plant. Some plants do not like any kind of root disturbance, and you can kill them by disturbing the roots, and that can be difficult. Most plants, if you were to dig your hole, wet the hole up, make sure you've got that moist, then take the tree or whatever and rinse about a third of the soil off of those roots and then plant the plant directly so that your native soil is in direct contact with the roots, and you'll have less problems. And don't bury it too deep.
Oh, yes, I think I know how to plant them, so I've got that. It was just keeping them either watered, and some things just go fine and some things don't, you know. Well, I do realize that's life, but
sometimes you have to water every single day and maybe twice a day, depending on your soil type.
Okay, all right. Well, it's very, very sandy, and I haven't had a chance to, you know, start improving it with layers of this and that, you know, kind of helping it get going. So,
and sand will dry out very fast.
Yes, I know. All right. Well, thank you very much. I think you're giving me confidence now.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for the call. And just before you go, what is a puffball? I'm sorry. Please excuse my ignorance.
Puffball is
ignorant. Go ahead.
Puffball is a round, looks like a little round ball fungus. And when it dries out, if you hit it or squeeze it, the spores come out like puff, like little brown, tiny puff of brown smoke goes poof.
Huh.
And they grow all over the United States.
How big do they get?
Depending on how rich they are and built up nutrition within the fungus that lives underground. So the above ground part is the only part you see is a fruiting structure while it lives underground for years and years and years, feeding on dead organic material. And then you see the puffball come up one year when it's moist enough, there's enough moisture around. And some can get quite large, you know, several inches across, and other ones will be quite small.
Is it dangerous if it puffs and you ingest the puff?
Yes. You know, you don't want to be breathing in that much spores. That's not good for you.
All right, so don't breathe in the puffballs, okay?
No.
Thank you so much for calling on the Fall Garden Confidential. We had to, at the last minute today, change our telephone number for you to call. So we only have one line working for callers. Our apologies, but thank you for being patient. The line is now open at 575-646-3632 to ask Jeff Anderson a question on the Fall Gardening Confidential. Jeff comes to us from the Doñana County Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. And I tell you, we have yet, except maybe some of the wildlife questions might stump Jeff, but he's really not a wildlife expert, but he is a gardening expert and can answer your question. And we have another caller now. Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for calling. KRWG, who's this?
This is Ivan.
Hi, Ivan. How can we help you?
I have a question about termites that are in a dead stump that's been in my yard.
What is your question?
So I wanted to know if I should, like, it's a dead stump, so they're kind of eating away at the dead stump, which I was going to pull eventually. So I thought, well, they're helping me, you know, making it weak. But then I have a tree, like, maybe 10 feet away, and I'm like, well, maybe I should address it before they go to the live tree.
When they finish your dead stump, they're still going to get hungry again, right?
Yeah, that's what I kind of figured. But
so the desert here is loaded with all kinds of termites. And, you know, if we didn't have termites, we'd have piles of debris throughout the desert because they're the ones that break things down, along with ants and other things. So they break it down the tree. You just want to make sure and watch that they don't go to your house, end up in that direction. And as long as your other tree is healthy and living, they should not attack it. Not a guarantee, but it's something to just monitor.
Okay. So they are kind of helping me.
So they are what?
They are kind of helping me, making it weak so I could pull out this big stump, I imagine.
Yeah, you may not want to plant anything back there for a while.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much. That was
all
my question.
Right. Thanks for the call. We appreciate hearing from you today. And it looks like we have a, well, I Sorry, I feel like I'm winded a little because I'm doing something that Mark is normally doing. Our engineer, Mark Johnson, trying feverishly as we speak to get our regular phone line up and functioning again. But in the meantime, you're dialing me directly in the studio at 646-3632. So I have to remember to answer the phone, but then also to manually hang it up or else the line stays busy, which I think I did there at the beginning for a little while. So... just a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes. But we had a Facebook question I wanted to address quickly. Dara says, perhaps my issue is similar to the first call, but I had two cucumber plants this year. They did very well and produced a ton of flowers, but not a single fruit. What did I do wrong?
Ooh. You know, I was just reading about, certain cucurbits will produce pretty much all male flowers. And then it's just a matter of time before female flowers are produced. And as to why they may not trigger into that, I think that's a pretty much unanswered question all over the place. There could be some genetics in there that are keeping it more on the male because they produce male and female flowers. So maybe they're not getting pollinated correctly. So you want to look at your plants and look to see if you've got only male flowers or if you have male and female flowers. If you have no bees to pollinate or any insects around to pollinate them, you may not get any cucumbers.
All right, very good. Well, better luck next time, and maybe we can catch up with you in the spring and see when you're setting things up. Check in with us, and then Jeff can let you know if you're on the right track.
Try lemon cucumbers.
Lemon cucumbers, are they just the most hardy to grow here?
They seem to be pretty prolific producers over the green.
All right. 575-646-3632. And hi, you're on the Fall Gardening Confidential. Who's this?
David.
Hi, David. What can we do for you?
There was two things. Somebody was wondering if we had moles in southern New Mexico.
Yeah.
I live in Gila. And I just had to dispatch moles. Nice. So, yes, we have them here. And the other thing was puffballs. I lived in Ohio. We used to eat them.
What?
And yes, they're edible. The big, they're called giant puffballs. They're white. And while they're young, you can slice them and fry them in butter. They taste like a mushroom.
Wow. So, when I first heard the word puffball, I must confess, to me it sounded like something to eat.
Well, I had a puffball grow on a stump that grew just slightly smaller than a basketball. So they do get really large, but they need a lot of moisture. And they're delicious.
Well, thanks for calling.
Yeah, Casey,
okay,
I knew they were edible, but I personally don't want to recommend mushrooms to anybody because there's some deadly poisonous ones. So unless you really know what you're looking at, there could be sometimes ones that look like you think are one thing and end up to be deadly poisonous. So you know, if you're going to go collect them wild, you better be with an expert that knows what they're looking at.
Yeah. If I were to find some mushrooms and say, I wonder if these are safe to eat, is there a place around here locally to take them to find out?
Almost no. I mean, you have to go to a fungal expert. And we do have one at the university, but, you know, by the time you get the sample to him and get it back, you may have dried up mushrooms that, you know, you're not going to end up eating. So,
gotcha.
You know, maybe find, I forget what the term is, but mushroom group that can educate you on how to find the right ones. And just whatever you do, don't eat the wrong one.
All right. Sounds like great advice. We'll go back to the phone now, 646-3632 for the Fall Gardening Confidential. Hi, good afternoon.
We'll go back to the phone now.
I'm trying to get on the phone line.
You are on the phone line, but I'll need you to turn your radio down. That's the...
Hi, good afternoon.
I can hear myself there in the background.
Yeah. I'll turn that off.
Thank you. Go ahead now.
I'm with your last caller. My name's Taylor. I'm from Caballo. And not here, but in the mountains, we eat puffballs all the time, and they're easy to distinguish from other mushrooms because they get so big. And if you slice through them, they're of the same consistency, a kind of white, solid consistency all the way through. So they're kind of hard to confuse with another mushroom. So, and we have moles in Caballo, underground, all a lot of that stuff. And it's also where the rattlesnakes like to hang out. So.
Well, thank you for your comments. I'm going to have to talk with my wildlife specialist because, you know, I don't work with moles and rats. I can tell you how to kill them, but, you know, I just haven't seen one on Las Cruces.
My bird dog is very good at finding them, catching them not, but finding them yet.
Hey, do you garden by any chance?
Well, sort of.
I'm afraid to ask.
Yeah, right. Not really, no. But I enjoy the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling. Always glad to hear from you. And thanks for listening in Caballo. We appreciate having you along. 575-646-3632 is the telephone number to call. We had to change our number. Our main line went down just before the show today. And so we only have one line available for our callers. And we hope that you will please continue to try. So it's, you know, you might get a lot of busy signals, but we just hung up with that caller. So we've got an open line now and ready to take your question at 646-3632. And Jeff, there was one follow-up question from the lady who wrote about the tomato plants. She had a follow-up question to say, how much longer can I grow my tomatoes and at what point do they start dying off?
Okay, we're already October. We're going to next week be low 40s, and then we're going to be the 30s. If you've got tomato plants growing and you've got good-sized tomatoes, let them ripen for as long as you can. Watch out for the freeze. If you got small tomatoes on them, just pull them off because they're never going to, you know, unless they're cherry tomatoes, they're not going to make it. So let the energy go to finishing up those last few good tomatoes, beefsteak, medium-sized tomatoes, whatever you have there.
All right, very good. And we have our next caller on the line. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Sean from Las Cruces.
Sean, what can we do for you?
I have two oak trees. I guess my question is, they're kind of starting to mature. When and if would we start pruning these, or would we ever start pruning them?
So that also depends on what type of oak you've got. And a lot of times people have southern live oaks, and their southern live oak is a little bit different. They're evergreen, but their branches tend to be very weepy, hanging very low to the ground. So they take a lot of training and pruning to keep them upright. But you should start pruning your oak tree about a year, year and a half after you planted it, to form a good scaffolding structure of the branches. You do not want to wait too late to form that structure, otherwise you end up with twisted masses and having to cut out more than you should. But yeah, you can trim them a little bit each year to direct their growth to the proper structure it should have, so that'll make it a strong tree. If you haven't done anything at all for years, then there's an art to pruning, and you really got to be a good artist to find those good structure branches to start shaping it. I actually this summer went out and showed somebody whose southern live oak had never been touched, and it was all tied up like a bowl of spaghetti, and it took quite a bit of effort to work that out to find some good branch structure. So if you start earlier, it's a lot better.
Okay, because we planted these about 4 or 5 years ago, and when we purchased them, they were about 5, 6 years old maybe, and they're red oaks.
Okay. So what would you like to do on pruning them? You can prune them. So, you know, they're growing very vigorously and getting tall. You can lift the canopy slowly, remove lower branches so that you'll be able to walk under it. Or if you got a sidewalk, you can walk under it. Or cars, you can park, get under there. But it's a slow progress to make sure you don't end up with crossing branches and the branch structures going in the correct direction. And don't forget about root pruning when you go to plant it, because you don't want twisted up roots and then have the tree fall over, you know, 10 years later. So you always want to make sure your roots are, when you plant it, your roots are straight going out in all directions.
All right. Was that something that you thought of when you planted the trees?
You know what? I did not. I mean, they're young trees. They're not hanging very. They're firmly cemented into the ground. They got about a 6-inch diameter at the trunk now, maybe even more. I'm gonna say probably even more than that, because I'm looking outside at them right now. But I've really never pruned them, so I have a few branches that are just kind of straight out. It hasn't turned to a spaghetti like he was explaining yet. I don't want it to get to that point.
Yeah, some trees like the red oaks have a better branch structure. So you always want to look for more of a...
One more time?
Red oaks are generally have good branch structures. So you want to get a 90-degree angle on your branches. You want to look for the branches that are going to stay there for the whole life of the tree. So any branches that are errant, like growing straight down, that are interfering with things or crisscrossing over, you know, select the branches that keep that tree growing outward in an appropriate manner for the tree.
Okay, that's starting to make a lot of sense now. Does that make sense to you? And are you going to be pruning your tree yourself, you think?
That's perfect. Yes, that makes perfect sense to me. That's all excellent information. I really appreciate that, guys.
All right. Thank you for the call. We appreciate having you along.
Sometimes in the nurseries, they cut off the tips of the branches and the top, and that's where you start getting a tangle of things, because then the interior branches start growing and crossing over each other, and then you have to straighten that all out. So in nature, they wouldn't be all tipped off. They go up and out naturally.
All right. The Fall Gardening Confidential is made possible on KRWG Public Media in part by the New Mexico Department of Agriculture, which provides consumer protection, supports agriculture producers, ensures food safety, and much more. More information at nmda.nmsu.edu and 646-3632, the telephone number to call for the Gardening Confidential with Jeff. With Jeff Anderson. Hi, you're next. Who's calling?
This is Roberto from San Bernardino.
How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. I wanted to ask, I grow my veggies organically. What kind of plant can I put around my squash to keep the squash bugs away?
It's pretty hard to keep squash bugs away. I've heard people say wrap your stems with some aluminum foil tight enough so that the squash bugs can't get in there. Go out there every day and make sure you pick out those squash bugs. There are a little bit of chemicals. 7 dust might help a little bit to deter them. But I don't think there's any specific plants other than like marigolds and stuff that might help mask the smell of the squash plants, and that's so the squash bugs don't get into them. But generally, most cases, you can do screening. So you can do there's a real fine mesh white screen fabric that you put over it to keep them out. That's an exclusion method. Other than that, there isn't a whole lot of other things you can do.
Well, squash bugs are being problem.
You've been what, Roberto?
Okay. I've been doing it by hand. I go and pick them by hand, you know, with a little tweezer. But sometimes if I don't do it often, they overwhelm the plants. But thank you for your answer. Okay?
So tin foil around the stalks, or maybe the screen over the top, and add some marigolds for good measure.
Yeah, and you're organic. You're being organic, so find organic solutions makes it a lot more difficult.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Stay in touch. And you can follow along on Facebook as well. Just look for KRWG. Like us if you haven't already. We've got our Zoom meeting with Jeff Anderson streaming on our Facebook page. And we've got an alternative phone number for you to call today. Just one line working. Our apologies. Thanks for your patience. 646-3632. And hi, you're next on the Fall Gardening Confidential. Who's this? Oops. Hi, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, great. Who's this?
My name is Katie.
Hi, Katie. What can we do for you today?
Question for the Gardening Confidential. Did I get the right number?
You sure did.
Good. My question's about Tree of Heaven.
Okay. Go ahead.
And so, so my question is what to do with it. I live in a part of town where it seems that all the neighbors have it. I have it. I'm bound to continue having it. So, especially along the fence lines with neighbors, how to deal with it, especially when it's really established.
Okay, you said Tree of Heaven.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, what is that, Jeff?
So that was a tree that was imported from China to grow on mine spoils. So they couldn't get any vegetation to grow on mine spoils. So that tree would grow on real toxic ground, but guess what? It grows everywhere. It's on the New Mexico noxious weed list. It's most states have it on their noxious weed list. It seems like virtually every seed that falls comes up, and the trees put down deep tap roots and side lateral roots, and every node on those roots produces a whole forest of trees. So you can get rid of them, although it's pretty hard to get rid of them in your neighborhood because the roots run a long ways. And so they will keep invading your area. But in your own personal yard, you can get rid of them. And the way to get rid of them is starting like right now, although they're starting already to lose leaves, but September, you cut the tree down and you put concentrated Roundup on the top of the tree where you cut it right away. And I know a lot of people are really upset with Roundup and that, but sometimes when you get really invasive super weeds, you've got to resort to a chemical. And that chemical mm-hmm. will be absorbed and translocated to the roots and hopefully kill out the colony. And it may take a couple years to do that.
Okay. So cut it right at the base, as close to the ground as you can get it, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. And then from there on, you're just going to have to watch out for suckers coming from who knows where or seedlings popping up if you want to keep them out of there.
Thank you.
Well, good luck. Thanks for the call.
Thank you both. Bye-bye.
Bye now. 646-3632, the telephone number today for the Fall Gardening Confidential with Jeff Anderson. And we have another question coming from Facebook. Catherine says, is this where I submit the question? Yes, Catherine. First question, affirmative. She says, we have had some struggles finding the right plants for an area in my yard that only gets 2 hours of direct sunlight and is usually shaded by the house, but can handle the heat in those couple of hours that the hot New Mexico sun creates. Most shade plants we have looked at don't like the heat. Are there any shade plants that also can handle heat and would thrive here? Great question.
Yes. And it'd be a little difficult for me to name them all right off the top of my head. The trouble with that area is you're getting 2 hours direct sunlight, so that plant wants to develop the leaves for maximum sunlight potential, and then you get shade. So it's not like it's developing shade leaves and sun leaves at the same time. It's going to do one or the other. So some of the plants that can tolerate full sun don't do well in the shade, and the shade plants don't do well in the sun. So we want to look for, you know, if you want to stay with New Mexico natives, and then you got to supply water. But Rue's Virens, the evergreen sumac, is a native plant. And I've seen it grow in that typical kind of condition, and it doesn't get really large. And then I'd have to think of some other ones that probably could suit that same situation. But I will mention that the UTEP, University of Texas El Paso, is having their native plant sale tomorrow.
Oh.
From 9 until whenever they sell out. It's only going to be on the one day. So I'm going to be working down there at the UTEP Chihuahuan Desert Botanic Gardens for the sale.
Okay, that sounds nice. You said it starts at 9, and, you know, what's your experience at the sale? I mean, is everything gone in an hour?
No, this well, it depends on how many plants they bring in. But this spring, we sold out. It was planned for a Saturday and a Sunday, and we sold everything out on Saturday.
Yeah.
People are really hungry to get those native plants.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, well, I wrote that down, shade plants that handle heat. So maybe when we, over the course of the next hour, if anything comes to mind, I'll keep a list going here and we'll remember to come back to that topic because I think that's something that a lot of people really are interested in finding for around their homes. It's almost 12:50 and at the top of the hour, right at 101, we'll take a break for NPR News. This is the Fall Gardening Confidential with Jeff Anderson from the Doñana County Extension Cooperative Extension Service here at New Mexico State University, here to answer your gardening questions. And we have another caller. Oh, I think I lost you. So just to let everyone know, because of the phone trouble we were having, we have the one line that's coming into the studio, 646-3632. So we don't have a call screener. So you'll hear me like answer the phone and not say hello to you. Just know that you're not supposed to hang up. Stay on the line, and we'll come to you just as soon as we can. Hi, good afternoon. You're on the Fall Gardening Confidential. Who's this?
Hi, this is Tricia, and I have a hint for that person who was worried about the woodpecker getting through the winter. There's a place in town called Wild Birds, and they'd be very happy to help you. They're awfully knowledgeable.
Oh, yes. Okay, very good. Yeah, thank you. It sounds like from some of the calls we've got today that our next, one of our future voices of the public should be a wildlife show, right?
Well, at least you could do it separate, but equal, birds and critters, you know.
Oh, yes, all birds and critters welcome on the wildlife show.
Birds and critters, but, you know, they have bat houses over there, and they have they know what they're talking about. I went to high school with one of the people who works there, so they'll help you.
And well, yeah.
Let's tell them they need to sponsor our radio station.
All right. Well, as long as we get help for the family with the woodpeckers that have moved literally almost into their home, that's all we care about.
I think that would be fun myself. Anyway,
all right.
they will know.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
You're
you.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, I forgot about that, but Wild Birds Unlimited is an excellent place to go. I've gone there myself. Excellent knowledge on birds. You're going to put bat houses up on, don't put them on your house because bats can carry rabies and some really bad viral diseases. So be careful where you put those bat houses.
Yeah, I really want one. I love watching them in the evenings come down into the yard and eat the mosquitoes. And they're so adorable, Jeff. Stop shaking your head. No.
I have a deadly phobia of bats.
So. Oh, no. Oh, no. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I appreciate them. I really do appreciate them. I just have that's my worst phobia. Now everybody knows that's my worst phobia.
Oh, wow. Well, Jeff, I'm shocked, but you just never know, right? So, yeah, I kind of look at them and they're like little puppy dogs to me. Not so much. Not so much for Jeff.
Dracula's right. Coming to get me. I know it's not true, but in my mind, Dracula's coming to get me.
That's how the mind works. That's how phobias work, right? It doesn't always make sense, but that's how it goes. 575-646-3632, and hi, you're on the Fall Gardening Confidential.
Oh, thank you. This is Gladys. We have recently moved to New Mexico from Florida, well, a year ago. And, of course, you know, so different. I used to do a lot of gardening and planting in Florida, but here everything is different. But a friend of my son's gave him a very nice little tree. I forget the kind of plant it is, but it's about 4 feet tall. And it was doing well in one of those big black plastic containers, but it wasn't growing and it wasn't bushing out. So he decided to put it on the ground, and he did put black soil, but the tree is not doing anything. Pomegranate. and it's not getting new leaves, it's not growing, it's not dying, but it's just totally the same size. Mm-hmm. And we watered it, we think, like twice a week, but it's not. It's such a lovely tree. We just would hope, you know, to see it bush out at least.
Well, and pomegranates. I know lots of people that grow pomegranates in this area, so they do okay right here, right, Jeff?
Yeah, pomegranates do exceptionally well here. Generally, they're not grown as a tree because we'll get a freeze, and it freezes them back. So they tend to be big bushes, and you can kind of train it up into a small tree. But right. If it's not getting going, it's probably because it's forming a root system the first year. You know, all you have to do is just make sure you keep it watered. By next year, it should start taking off. Next year, between April and July, you can fertilize. Uh-huh. Not after July. You don't want to really fertilize. So, small monthly applications of fertilizer.
And is like once a week or twice a week enough water? Or should every day?
Not when it's young. And if you are you in sandy soil?
Yes.
So in sandy soil, the water goes straight through it and it won't hold on to it. So you should be watering it probably a minimum of every other day. Once you get it established really well, it'll be very drought tolerant. But if you want big pomegranates, you need to water it once it's very well established, at least once or twice a week. But when it's new, you need to water it probably every other day, but we're going into the fall now, so just keep the ground moist.
Oh, let it go dormant. I'm not that interested in the fruit because his friend has so many pomegranates. He gives us some, but I love the tree. They're so pretty. So that's what, you know, I would like to look at a healthy tree. Thank you very much.
There are some that produce only flowers. There's one called Carrot Top. And it just produces great big flowers, no fruit.
Mm, that would be lovely. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay.
Thank you for calling. And I know it's been a year, but welcome to New Mexico.
Thank you so much. We love it.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Now. Bye. 575-646-3632, the telephone number to call today for the Fall Gardening Confidential with Jeff Anderson. So happy to have him for a whole nother hour. We've just got a couple minutes left in this hour. We will take a break for NPR News, but we have a whole nother hour to answer your questions here on the Fall Gardening Confidential. So we invite you to call. We have, if you're just joining us, our normal telephone number, the line for that number went down. So we're working with just one line. And no ability to have someone to immediately answer your phone call because it will be me answering the phone and we'll be coming to you just as soon as and as efficiently as we can. 646-3632, the telephone number. And you can follow us along on Facebook, too. That's a great way to leave a question for Jeff or a comment if you're having trouble getting through on the phone line. So we invite you to do that as well. Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the Fall Gardening Confidential. What's your question?
Hi, I have a question about a crepe myrtle plant.
Go right ahead. Love those.
Okay. I've got a crepe myrtle plant in our backyard that does real well early in the year. And about mid-year, the leaves start turning brown on the edges. And I talked to a nursery person last year, and they said, oh, it's not getting enough water. Well, I poured the water to it all year, and as of now, the internal part, the original leaves, have pretty well turned 90% brown, but it's putting out healthy new shoots with new blooms. So I think it's more than a watering problem. I wondered if there's any insight you could share with me on that.
So you're correct on the crepe myrtle there. There are certain varieties that are very sensitive to salt, and we have a lot of salt in our soils, in our water, and the fact that our soils are alkaline too. So there are a couple of problems that certain cultivars have. So if you go back east, they grow like a weed because they have really good water and acid soils. So I do know that Natchez and Muskogee are two that do very well here. So it depends on their breeding heritage as to how well. Those two I know, there are a few others that do really well here that don't seem to mind the salt problem. But yeah, there are some that I've wanted to grow and I've tried to grow, and they just, the leaves burn up and fall off, and that's salt and alkalinity issues. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it.
Oh, I see. Okay. So there's not much to do to fix it for the plant. No. You have
find the right, you just find the right cultivars that will grow here.
Okay, so I'm stuck with this doing what it is if I want to keep this plant. Beautiful blooms, yes. So I've been hesitant to do anything to it.
Yeah, I mean, you could have mulch and organic matter to slow that burning process down, but they seem, no matter what, some varieties just burn up.
Okay, well, I'll live with it. It's worth it for the blooms we get, but I appreciate your input on it.
Sure.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye now.
And thanks so much for the call. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate your participation. And if you saw our social media post along the way, you saw that your comment or question there would register you for a $100 gift card from Sierra Vista Growers. So we have another hour with Jeff Anderson from the Doñana County Cooperative Extension Service here at New Mexico State University. And he is going to continue to answer your questions about what went right or wrong in your summer garden. How are your trees doing? What are you planting for fall? And we'll also touch a little bit about what should we maybe be planting now for spring blooms. And all of that is coming up in the next hour. We're just a few seconds away from NPR News here. This is KC Counts. So glad to have you along for the Fall Gardening Confidential. And again, the telephone number to have handy is 575-646-3632. And we will be right back right after NPR News here on KRWG Public Media.